These guys are going to do a scene, except Brad and Ryan are only given two lines. That's all they're going to be allowed to say during the whole scene. Brad, the lines you're allowed to say are, that's easy for you to say, and is that good? Ryan, the lines you're allowed to say are, what are those? And I'm sorry I wasn't listening. Colin can say whatever he wants. The scene is, an army captain, Colin, is looking for two volunteers to go on a dangerous mission. Take it away whenever you're ready.
I'm not much for beating around the bush. I'm looking for two volunteers to go on a dangerous mission. Two volunteers, and now I only have a platoon of two. It may be easy to get those volunteers. We have to go over to enemy territories, armed with nothing but a can opener, some barbed wire, and a very quiet goat.
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening.
We have to go. Enemy lines, goat, barbed wire, and a can opener. Are you ready to do this for your country?
That's easy for you to say.
It is easy for me to say, for I am a captain.
Is that good?
It's very good. It's much better than private.
What are those?
Those are stripes. They make me the captain. You are privates. Now, I was told to take hold of the privates, go into enemy territory, and fulfill the mission.
That's easy for you to say.
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening.
Look.
What are those?
Those are called fingers.
Is that good?
Yes, it is good.
I'm sorry I wasn't listening.
All right, just calm down.
I'm sorry.
Listen, we're going into enemy territory. It's very dangerous.
Is that good?
It's good in one way because we're helping our country win the war. It's bad in that we may be killed.
What are those?
That's what I call the ground. It helps when you walk on it like that.
That's easy for you to say.
All right, stop.
What are those?
Those are just the spastic movements of a man who's going on a mission to save the world.
What are those? I'm sorry, I wasn't listening.
Is that good?
Yes, it was. That was very good. Try one yourself. All right, I'm going to teach you some basic moves.
What are those?
Well, I haven't shown you them. Once I show them, then you will see.
I'm sorry, I wasn't
You weren't listening. I know. Yes, that's good. All right, just stand there. Stand there. Take the can opener. Here's a can opener. There's a can opener.
That's easy for you to say.
Well, what are those?
Those are can openers.
Sorry, I wasn't listening.
I know. All right. So we head towards the enemy. We sneak up behind them.
That's easy for you to say.
Look, one thing you have to know is sneaking. You can't be shouting. That's easy for me to say. I know you weren't listening. Just follow what I'm doing.
Is that good?
This is very good.
That's easy for you to say.
All right. So as we pick up in Joshua today, we're going to be finishing chapter one, and Joshua is going to send his two privates on a dangerous mission. What we have seen so far as we have looked at this book is that Moses is dead. This is a low point in Israel's history. They have lost their leader who had been leading them for over 40 years. And now he's dead. They don't even know where he is buried. We see that elsewhere in Scripture, that God took him up on a mountain, and they just never saw him again. Moses is dead. He has left Joshua in charge. But God has come to Joshua and reminded him that the land is theirs. He has promised them the land all the way since back in the first few chapters of Genesis, and it is now time for them to go in and claim the land that has been promised to them. And last week, we saw that God commanded Joshua to be bold. We saw God told Joshua to be strong and courageous. Because God was going with him, because God was going with the nation of Israel into the land to give them the land that was promised them, he told Joshua he could be confident in leading the people. So Joshua has now come to the point where he needs to step up. He needs to step into this role of leadership, and he needs to lead Israel into the land. And in about two more chapters, he might finally get there, but he is not there yet. In fact, Joshua still seems to be dealing with some level of timidity, because here's what we see as we finish out chapter one. Joshua, the son of Nun, sent two men secretly. I said into chapter one. We are definitely in chapter two. That heading is wrong. We are not in Joshua chapter 1, 5 through 18. We are in Joshua chapter 2. So all of these slides are going to be wrong. So if you're following along in your own scriptures, chapter 2 is where we're at. Don't get confused. All right, moving on. Chapter 2, verse 1. Joshua the son of Nun sent two men secretly in from Shittim as spies, saying, "Go, view the land, especially Jericho." And they went and came into the house of a prostitute whose name was Rahab and lodged there. Few different things that jump out at me as I look at this first verse. First, it is interesting that Joshua would be sending spies into the land of Canaan. Because Joshua, in his history, one of the first times we see him, he is the spy who goes into the land of Canaan. He goes into the land. He and 11 other men, 12 spies, go into the land of Canaan. They survey the land of Canaan. They come back out. 10 of those spies say, absolutely not. They're giants. They're terrifying. They're scary. We're not going in. If we go in there, we will surely die. But two spies come back, Joshua and Caleb, and they tell Moses, look, God has given us this land. God has promised us this land. God has told us that we can take this land. We need to go in and take this land. The nation listens to the 10, not the 2. They don't go in. They end up wandering the desert for 40 years. Come full circle 40 years later, and Joshua sends two spies into the land to go and spy out the land to tell. I think the number 2 is interesting. I don't know if it's significant. But in my mind, this 2 is Joshua's way of saying, you know what, last time 10 got it wrong, 2 got it right, so this time I'm just going to send the 2 and see if we can get it right. He sends the 2 in as spies. It says, go view the land, especially Jericho. So he's getting ready to cross the Jordan, but he wants to know what's on the other side. He wants a little more confidence than what he has at this point. He sends them, and then there's this last line, and I've heard preachers do crazy things with this last line. I don't know what to do with it myself. It says, and when they went in, they came into a house of a prostitute whose name was Rahab and lodged there. I have heard pastors talk about the fact that really we shouldn't read too much into this. Really, the spies just wanted to go somewhere where the government wouldn't be tracking them, where the police wouldn't catch them. They wanted to hide in a place where nobody would be looking. We're going to see here in just a second that argument doesn't make any sense once you get to the next verse, but fine. I think this verse is simply here because the writer of the book of Joshua knows what's going to happen next. See, the writer already knows the end of the story because the writer has already lived through the rest of the story. The writer knows that Rahab is a significant person. The writer knows that there is no reason that Rahab should be a significant person, and yet Rahab ends up being an incredibly significant person. So right here at the beginning of the story, the writer's already trying to tell you, pay attention. This person is important. This person is significant. Something crazy is about to happen. I think that's why the writer chooses to put this here. Nothing more than that. All right, because here's what we see next. And it was told to the king of Jericho, behold, men of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land. So if this, the reason they chose Rahab's house was because it was a place to hide, it was a terrible plan. Because immediately we see that the king of Jericho, the king, had men who were there who went, hey, there's these guys from Israel here. They're not hiding very well. We saw them. Not only did we see them, we know what they're here for. They're here to search out the land. They're here to spy on us. So the king of Jericho sent to Rahab saying, bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out all the land. But the woman had taken the 2 men and she'd hidden them. So the king sends these soldiers, these men, to Rahab's house to get the spies who are there staying with her, that he knows are staying with her. And when they come, they say, bring them out. Give us these guys. And Rahab goes, no. Before they get there, she's hidden them. What you see is that she responds to them by saying, look, true, you're right. Men came to me, but I didn't know where they were from. And when the gate was about to be closed at dark, the men went out. I don't know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them. But she had brought them up to the roof and hid them in the stalks of flax that she had laid out in order on the roof. So the men pursued after them on the way to the Jordan as far as the fords. And the gate was shut as soon as the pursuers had gone out. So these soldiers have showed up. They want the men brought out, and Rahab has hid them on the roof. And she's like, oh, I know the men you're talking about. They did come here. They did stay here. We did spend some time together, but I didn't know who they were, so they left. In fact, they left and went out of the city. They went through the gate. And there's a lot of talk about the gate here for a reason, because then they pursue them out of the gate, and as soon as the dark comes, they close the gate. The reason the gate is such a big deal here is, as we're going to see in future chapters, the thing that Jericho is most known for in this period of time is its wall. It was a heavily walled, heavily fortified city that would have been near impossible to overtake because of its wall. In fact, its only weak point would have been the gate. The gate is the part that would have been attacked if they were going to battle, because they needed to get that gate open. And the gate would, generally speaking, be open during the day so traders could come in and traders could go out. But at night, as soon as the dark fell, when people would typically attack, that gate would be closed. And once that gate was closed, nobody was coming in, nobody was going out. Jericho was secure. Jericho was safe. So what she's saying is, they left the city. You don't have to worry about them being in the city anymore. They left the city. But if you want to catch them, you should go out and catch them now, because, you know, the king's soldiers, they're the tough guys. You're really strong. I bet you could catch them if you go. You've got to be faster than, they're just Israelites. Israelites don't have, they don't have any army or anything. They're tiny. Go get them. So they leave, and and the gates close, and now they're outside, and the spies are still inside. They're outside, they can't come back in, and the spies are inside, and they can't get out. And this is where we see Rahab go make her deal. She says, before the men lay down, she came to them on the roof and said to the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the fear of you has fallen upon us, and that the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you devoted to destruction. So she comes up to the men on the roof, gets them out from under the flax, and says, look, I know who you are. I know where you're from. I even know the God you serve. Because I've been living here in Jericho, and I have watched what has happened. I have heard, and this is where it's crazy, I have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you. That was 40 years ago. This is not something that happened yesterday. I mean, we read it and it's like chapter. There were 40 years between the drying of the Red Sea and now Rahab, who likely is not even 40 years old, is saying, I've heard about that. I know about that thing that happened in Egypt. All the way, like, that was a long distance between the two, and she's heard of this event. She's like, I know what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, Sihon and Og. The Israelites are now a part of regular conversation in the city of Jericho. They know who these Israelites are. They know what God has been doing. They know that God dried up the Red Sea so that they could walk through on dry land. They know that they are getting victories that they should not have, defeating kings that they should not be able to defeat. And they're terrified. It says that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. The fear of you have fallen on us. This city, one of the most secure cities at the time, are terrified. Rahab goes on to say, and as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that as I have dealt kindly with you, you also will deal kindly with my father's house. And give me a sure sign that you will save alive my father and my mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death. So Rahab's saying, look, we have seen you coming. We are terrified. I now know there is something special about your God. I know that there is something special about the nation of Israel. Because of the things that I have heard from other people, I know that your God is something special. So what she does is she changes allegiances. She says, look, I am going to protect God's people. I am going to serve your God, but here's what I ask in return. Please swear to me by your God that when the time comes, you will deal kindly with me and my father's house. When the time comes to overthrow our city the way you did the other kings, when it comes time to destroy our army the way your God destroyed Egypt's army, when that time comes, would you show my family mercy? And what we end up seeing here, we talked last week about the fact that when God sent the nation of Israel into Canaan, that yes, one of the things he told them to do was wipe everyone out, but that was only the third of three options. The first option, we said that as people went into the land of Canaan, as Israel went into the land of Canaan, was you could become a proselyte Jew. You could become a follower of God and continue on living in your land, in your place, because you would then be a part of Israel. Well, Rahab is the first example we see of that. They go into Canaan. They encounter in the city of Jericho this prostitute Rahab, who says, I'd like to change sides. I would like to leave my gods of Canaan. I'd like to leave the tradition. I'd like to leave all this, and I'd like to become a part of Israel. Would you allow me to live? She is the first one to attempt to join the nation of Israel. And the men say to her, our life for yours, even to death. If you do not tell this business of ours, then when the Lord gives us the land, we will deal kindly and faithfully with you. Their response is, yes. Yes, if this is the decision you are making, if you are making this decision, we can promise you, we will even promise you on our lives, we will deal kindly with you. We will be faithful to that promise. You will be allowed to live moving forward. So their answer is yes, because that is what God has given as instructions. She is following those instructions. She gets to live. There we go. So it says, then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was built into the city wall, so that she lived in the wall. I don't think that's a coincidence. That of all the places the spies could have gone when they got there, they happened to pick the one house that is on the wall. So that when that gate is shut, when they can't come get out, when the others can't come in, they still have a means of escape. And she lets them down by a rope from the window. And she says to them, go into the hills, or the pursuers will encounter you, and hide there 3 days until the pursuers have returned. Then afterward, you may go your way. So she lets them down. She lets them know this is about how many days it's going to take for the pursuers to go scour everything. This is where you can hide until they're done, and you will be free. Afterwards, you can go on your way. So she gives them all the instructions, and she lets them down. But before they go, they want to clarify the terms of their deal. I'm still not clicking, guys. I don't know. There we go. And the men said to her, we will be guiltless with respect to this oath of yours that you have made us swear. Behold, when we come into the land, you shall tie the scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down. And you shall gather into your house your father and your mother, your brothers, and all your father's household. And I say, when we come back, basically, the same window that we went down, you're going to tie this red cord out there. We're going to see that red cord, and we're going to know that's where Rahab is. Because these spies, remember, we know, a lot of us who grew up in Sunday school, we know the story of how Jericho is going to get conquered. The spies don't know that yet. It hasn't happened yet. That's still future. They can't see the future. So they're saying, when we come back, we need to know where you're going to be. When we attack this city, when we come into the city, we need to know where you and your family are going to be. So you take this cord, you hang it outside your window, that'll let us know where you are. And get your father, get your mother, get your brothers, get your sisters, get them all into your house, all your father's household, and you and your whole family will live. He says, except, there we go, if anyone goes out of the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we shall be guiltless. But if a hand is laid on anyone who is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head. But if you tell this business of ours, then we shall be guiltless with respect to your oath that you have made us swear. And she said, according to your words, so be it. And then she sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. So they give her these instructions, but they're saying, look, if they're in your household, they're safe. But if they leave, when they leave, their blood's going to be on their own head. It's going to be their problem. If they're outside, we cannot be held to blame for their death. If they're inside your household, they're safe. This would bear a lot of parallels to when they were leaving Egypt and they sat down to celebrate the Passover together, and the rules were spelled out for the Israelites. Look, you put the blood on the door frame, the scarlet cord on the door frame, you stay inside the house, you're safe. Your firstborns are safe. The angel of death won't kill your firstborn. If you are not in the household, that's on you. Same kind of deal here. Look, stay inside. When we come to attack, tie this cord outside your window. Said, if you do that, and if you don't tell that we were here and what we did while we were here, if those two things are true, then when we get here, you'll be safe. So then they leave. And I think it's awesome. Rahab doesn't waste any time, because, I mean, they've got to go all the way back to camp. They've got to meet with their army. They then have to somehow get their army back across the Jordan River to come attack. She's not taking any chances, though. They leave. She immediately ties the scarlet cord out their window, which means for probably weeks, her fellow people in Jericho would have looked at her window and been like, why you got the scarlet cord hanging out your window? That's weird. You're the only one with this red rope hanging out your window. What's that all about? And for weeks, she'd be answering that question with something other than, well, there were these two spies, see, and they came, like, she had to give some kind of answer, but she was not taking any chances. That cord was out her window. I wouldn't be surprised if her whole family lived at her place from that day until the day the Israelites came, because she was not messing around. In her mind, she knew the God that was coming to do battle. She knew that the God who was coming to do battle was not a God who took things lightly. She was taking no chances. That cord was out the window. So they departed, they went in the hills, and they remained there 3 days until the pursuers returned. And the pursuers searched all along the way and found nothing. They follow her instructions, they go on the wait the 3 days where she told them to wait, and they're safe. The spies get away because they have listened to the word of Rahab. So they return to the camp, and they give their report. It says, then the two men returned. They came down from the hills and passed over and came to Joshua, the son of Nun, and they told him all that had happened to them. And they said to Joshua, truly, the Lord has given all the land into our hands, and also all the inhabitants of the land melt away because of us. So they come back to Joshua, the one who had sent them out on this dangerous mission, to tell him about the land, and I love it. They give Joshua's words right back to him, as if they had been there 40 years earlier, which we know from the rest of the story they were not. They come back and say, hey, Joshua, you remember when you went to go look at the land and you came back and told everybody that because God had given us this land, we had nothing to worry about, we had nothing to be afraid of, we could just go take the land, it didn't matter how big they were, didn't matter how many of them there were, doesn't matter how big their walls are, it doesn't matter because if God is for us, no one can be against. Remember all those things you said 40 years ago, Joshua? Yeah, they're still true today. They're still true today. Truly, the Lord has given this land into our hands. We can go take it. In fact, all these people that we should be scared of, they're terrified of us because they know who our God is. They know what our God has been doing. We can go and take this land. And we're going to see next week that this seems to be the thing that turns Joshua's heart. Almost hearing his own words repeated back to him 40 years later, he finally decides to get up and go. But what about this week? What's the so what? What's the takeaway from this? Well, first and foremost, I want you to know, no matter your past, no matter where you're coming from, no matter what's going on in your life, you can choose God. No matter who you are, no matter what descriptor comes after your name, Rahab is the picture for us that God still has a plan for you. No matter what you think of yourself, when you think, I am Kyle, fill in the blank. I am Scott, fill in the blank. I am Pat, fill in the blank. No matter what your background, no matter what you are known for, no matter what things you tell yourself you just cannot get over, God can still use you. God still has a purpose for you. We talked about this when we were looking at Philippians. If you are still drawing breath today, God has a purpose for you to be here today. You still can choose God, no matter your background, no matter your past. We're going to see more of that next week. Because one of the biggest myths that people seem to get stuck on when thinking about their relationship with God is, but you don't understand what I've done. You don't understand where I've been. God could never forgive whatever it is. Rahab, I think, is an example to us that no, it does not matter what you've done. It does not matter where you've been. It does not matter your past. You can still choose God. Second, when we see God work, the impossible seems possible. As Rahab learned more and more about the things that the God of Israel was doing, dividing oceans or rivers, conquering foreign generals or foreign kings, the more impossible things that she saw God do through the people of Israel, the more impossible things that these spies and Joshua saw God doing, the more the impossible seemed possible. Because so often we can get distracted, I can get distracted, and get so busy looking at all the things that I need to do that I miss entirely the things that God is doing. And God is regularly on this planet doing things that are impossible, things that shouldn't be real, happen when God sets out to work. Yet I'm so busy and so focused on all the things I need to do, the checklists I need to get done, the applications I need to fill out, the dishes that I need to get done, the bathrooms that I need to get cleaned, whatever your things are that are distracting you that you need to get done can sometimes and often do distract us from the awesome things that God is doing. And when we shift our focus and start noticing the incredible things that God is doing on this planet, all of a sudden, the tasks that seem just too hard to get done don't seem that bad anymore. They don't seem that impossible. Because if God can do this, certainly he can help me with what I'm dealing with. So here's what I want you to do. Here's the practical, the take home, the tangible with this. I want you to write it down. I don't want you to just get your head up and start noticing these things. I want you to start noticing the things that God is doing around you. Notice the incredible, and every time you see God do something incredible, anything that makes you go, wow, that is a really cool thing that God just did. I want you to write it down. Doesn't have to be a journal. If you're like me, you don't like long form journaling, that's fine. Just write it down somewhere. Pull out if you have a Trello list, or just a notepad on your phone, or if you're like me and you have 1,000 sticky notes on your desk, grab a post-it note, write it down, but write it down somewhere. God did this. And then put it somewhere where you'll see it. If it's a notebook, keep it somewhere where you'll notice it. But when you see God do incredible things, write it down. And here's why. I think you will be surprised at how quickly you fill up a notebook or how quickly you run out of post-it notes as you start noticing and paying attention to the things that God is doing all around you all the time. And by seeing them, I think the things in your life that seem insurmountable, they're not going to become simple. It's not like noticing these is going to make it super easy to deal with tragedy. But it will make them seem more bearable. Because you will know that if my God can do this, certainly he can help me with this. And there's a second part of this. Tell somebody. When you write it down, tell somebody else. Twofold. One, repetition aids in learning. So as you're seeing it, as you're writing it down, and then you tell it, now you've encountered this great thing God has done three times. Seeing it, writing it down, telling somebody else three times helps it get in the brain better. But second, it could be that the person in your life who you choose to tell is also dealing with something in their life. And they might need a reminder because they haven't been noticing the things that God has been doing. And they may need the reminder that, hey, God is doing incredible things. Here's what he did in my life this week. Here's what he did in my life today. Whether you can see it or not, friend, whether you can see it, my family member, or not, I am seeing God do incredible things, and I just want to let you know my God is doing incredible things. They may need to hear that, and that encouragement can come from you, because as we see God do incredible things, as we see God take people out of a past that they think is insurmountable and offer them peace and forgiveness and a life with Christ, when we see God change this world one life at a time, we will start to realize if our God is for us, no one can be against us. We can be bold. We can be full of bravery the way Joshua was. Let's pray. God, I thank you. I thank you that you didn't give up on me. You could have. Certainly didn't earn any of the gifts that you gave me. Father, I pray that you help us as we go forward to notice, to observe, to celebrate the things that you are doing. Because whether we see them or not, you're doing great things. Whether we notice them or not, you are an awesome God. So I pray that you would help us as we seek to observe, to seek to notice the great things you are doing so that we can participate, so we can be encouraged by who you are and what you're accomplishing. Because God, you are a great God, and the hearts of the nations who stand against you melt in fear when they realize who you are and what you do. Father, give us the boldness to speak about the things we see, to speak about the things we hear, because you are worthy of our praise. God, as we come to worship now, I pray that it would be yet just another reminder of who you are, our God, our Father, in whose name we pray. Amen.